From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Okay, holiday gift givers, our gift to you is the perfect idea for those on your list, a book. We do this a couple times a year. We get our local booksellers together to come up with titles for you to think about. They come up with the best books so far, novels and fiction and mysteries. We talk about kids' books. A book might just be the one gift your loved ones will actually remember. So grab a pen and join us in just a moment.
This has been a busy year in the KUER newsroom. From religion...
How is this a moral issue? And do you see it that way?
To politics...
Democrat Ben McAdams has an edge over incumbent Mia Love.
To our region...
For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Nate Hedgie.
KUER has spent 2018 reporting the stories that matter to you. In the new year, we plan to cover even more. You can support the growth of trustworthy journalism here in Utah. Go to KUER.org and click donate. And thanks.
This is Radio West and Doug Fabrizio. Betsy Burton of the King's English Bookshop in Salt Lake City, do you remember the first book you received as a gift?
That's an easy one. Smokey the Cow Horse, given to me by my all-too-proper grandmother, surprised me and I loved it too.
Catherine Weller of Weller Bookworks in Salt Lake City, do you remember yours?
No, because my first book was given to me before I could read. I have a heritage with my grandmother who gave me books every Christmas, and I still have a collection of books. Merry Christmas, Catherine, from Papa and Bestemore.
Ken Sanders. Ken Sanders Rare Books on 2nd South in Salt Lake City. What about you?
Well, Doug, my late mother always used to claim that I was born with a book. I was around then, but I don't have any memory, and that could be some kind of an exaggeration, but certainly books were among the very earliest things I remember as presents, although I couldn't begin to tell you which one. The earliest present I actually can remember, and my little brother and I used to just literally beat them to death, was the Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
That's one that went right by me.
It was a boy thing.
Well, along with robots, books, as you can see, are pretty memorable as gifts. And today in the program, we're continuing our tradition of offering you book ideas for this season. All of the titles that we're going to talk about today and those we didn't get to will be on our website for you to go through. Or you could just have a pen handy and write some of them down. So listeners have already met you, so let us jump in. We're going to start with Ken Sanders. Back to you.
Doug, I want to start off with my friend Amy Irvine. She's got an accidental book out between her first book a decade ago, Trespass, Living on the Edge of the Promised Land, and this new big book she's been working on for 10 years. Yeah. It started out as just an introduction to the manuscript facsimile edition of Desert Solitaire that Back of Beyond Books has published for this Christmas season, and it's morphed into a whole book on its own. It's basically a contemplation and a critique of Edward Abbey and Desert Solitaire and male patriarchy in the environmental movement. I believe that she does it with love and respect. She has been on an endless tour for the past 6 weeks with the book to huge crowds and selling the books out everywhere she goes. I believe it's important dialogue to have now, and I'll just, at the risk of doing something I've never done before and being dorky about it, they asked me to write a blurb for it. So I did, and I'm not sure if one can quote oneself, but I'm going to try, okay? It's very short. If there wasn't a woman in Ed Abbey's trailer in Arches back in the 1950s, there is one now, and she has a room and a voice of her own. Amy Irvine, Desert Cabal. My friend Kate McLeod, last year she put out we're going to stick on a natural landscape theme here. Right. She put out a wonderful CD of violin music composed for natural landscapes. Mm. She's followed that up with a new tune book called Deep in the Sound of Terra. It's a beautiful, it's got all the words and the music that I, of course, can't read, of all of her beautiful violin tunes for landscapes.
What's the name of that?
It's called Deep in the Sound of Terra.
Great.
Stranger And Stranger is a new, beautiful, tiny little book from our very own Red Butte Press here up at the University of Utah, the Marriott Library Book Arts Program. It's a collaboration between Catherine Coles, the former Utah Poet Laureate, and noted artist Maureen Ure. It's a beautiful, small, it's not really Japanese folding
style.
Wow, it
is beautiful, isn't it?
But it opens up and it has beautiful poems and artwork. It's $100, which is an absolute bargain for a completely handmade press. And there's a list of at least a dozen people here that went into making this that I don't have time to mention.
Say the name of that again. This is really
Stranger
terrific.
And Stranger, Stranger by Catherine Coles and Maureen Ure. Red Butte Press. Lastly, a giant big coffee table book on the Bear's Ears, Views from a Sacred Land by Stephen Strom, which really gets into all of the landscapes, both panoramic and intimate, of what we have now lost with the Bear's Ears and the Escalante Monument's downsizing, and I think it's a beautiful statement about that.
And any text or just mostly?
No, it's lots of text, lots of photos.
Yeah. Great. Say the name of it again.
It's called Bear's Ears, Views from a Sacred Land.
Okay. Ken Sanders, thanks very much. Betsy Burton.
Okay, sticking with the nature theme, my first book is The Overstory, which I actually talked about on the summer program. It's by Richard Powers, and I still think it's the best novel of the year. So I wanted
That's saying something, because sometimes things change for you.
And they do.
This got better, but this one is staying
This one
it on
has
top.
Staying power. Yeah. It won the National Book Award, or no, he won the National Book Award, not for this, but it was shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize. It's just briefly, it's a story of nine people, each very involved one way or another with trees. And the overarching story, the overstory, is about trees and their interconnectedness. That's the theme of this book. It's just a brilliant novel. And along with it...
Say the name just one more time.
The Overstory, yeah. Richard Powers. Along with it, The Hidden Life of Trees. This is the illustrated edition. Peter, I don't even know how you say it, Wohlleben, he's German, he was a forester. He really wrote the science behind the story that Richard Powers tells about how trees are interconnected, how the ecosystem is all connected to them and them to the ecosystem, and how life, in fact, is interconnected. It was a fascinating book, new science at the time about 3 years ago. Now there is this beautiful illustrated edition, which is very useful, as you can see, wow. Because here we're talking about root systems and how the root hairs connect. The whole book is full of visual illustrations of all of his theories about how trees connect. Then there is trees.
Oh, my gosh. How
this
big is that sucker?
This is $75 worth. This is the most gorgeous book. Art Wolf is the preeminent nature photographer in the universe. He's just fabulous. And this book is all about trees from all over the world. He separates it into South America, North America, Europe, Africa, just as an illustration. Again, he does sort of what the other book does. This is where frankincense comes from the bark and the sap of this tree, which I, of course, can't remember the name of. But there's a wonderful illustration of what plane trees are in Europe and what are our sycamores. And then there's the ecosystem. Look at this picture. Wow. Of a leopard up in a tree. He's just a brilliant photographer, and anybody who loves nature, loves trees, will love any of these three books. And then my final book is The White Darkness, a tiny book on the opposite, polar opposite of Art Wolf. Yeah. It's $20 in hardback. It's beautiful. It's by David Gran, who, if you don't know, The Killers of the Flower Moon from last year, wrote the best nonfiction read last year. Yep. This is a great read, too. It's about a guy whose grandfather traveled with Shackleton and who wanted to go on the same journey. It's beautiful. There are lots of beautiful silvery snow photographs, and it reads. It's a killer read. It's
yeah.
just
He's
a great
an amazing.
Read.
We had him on the show about this book.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and it's an extraordinary story, and he's a terrific
it is.
Writer. Yeah.
And he makes it just come alive. So these four books are for nature.
Yeah, say the name of the David Gran one just one more time.
The White Darkness.
Yeah. Catherine Weller.
Okay, my first book is The Dinosaur Artist, Obsession, Betrayal, and the Quest for Earth's Ultimate Trophy by Paige Williams. This is a book about a lot of things, and to think of it as only paleontology is not accurate because it's kind of a true crime novel,
yeah,
as we'll hear in this clip that we're segueing into, in which the attorney Robert Painter is sitting in the very noted auction house in New York, Heritage, trying to prevent the auction of a dinosaur skeleton.
This is a reading by the actor Ellen Archer.
After a German sea lily fossil sold for $40,000, Heritage's president, Greg Rowan, who had been standing near the lectern murmuring into his cell phone, handed the auctioneer a note. The auctioneer scanned it and announced, "The sale of this next lot will be contingent upon a satisfactory resolution of a court proceeding." Largely intact dinosaur skeletons of any species are not easily found, and this one had been advertised as 75% complete, the auctioneer told the audience, saying, "It can fit in all rooms 10 feet high, so it's also a great decorative piece." Painter couldn't believe Heritage would defy a court order and go through with the sale. As the bidding opened at $875,000, he dialed Judge Cortez in Dallas, then held his BlackBerry aloft and announced to the room, "I hate to interrupt this, but I have the judge on the phone." The auctioneer eyed Painter, but never broke patter. He called for $900,000. As Painter started up the aisle toward the auctioneer, Rowan met him halfway, and for 5 seconds they squared off in a silent little dance, four arms waving. Painter trying to stop the sale, and Rowan trying to stop Painter. "Come with me, just come with me," Rowan said. A security guard stepped in and told Painter, Sir, you need to walk." "I have the judge on the phone," Painter told her. "Okay, well, you need to walk outside," the guard said, pointing him toward the back of the room. Heritage's attorney materialized, and Painter handed him his BlackBerry. As the attorney apologized to the Texas judge, the dinosaur skeleton sold.
Wow, it's true crime, right?
And that is the auction that created the case United States of America v. One Tyrannosaurus Bataar Skeleton. So it's a peculiarity of U.S. law that the U.S. had to file suit against the skeleton rather than any of the actors. But this is a wonderful story of a man named Eric Procopi who lived in Florida, and like many people in Florida, I'm making a sweeping generalization, I realize, lives large in all kinds of ways that we find to be very interesting. And he grew up collecting shark's teeth off the coast, fossilized shark's teeth. And that was like the gateway drug for him, being a fossil collector. He collected more and more and ended up going to Mongolia repeatedly to get skeletons and fossils to bring back to the United States. At first, this is something that wasn't really objected to, but as Mongolia began to establish itself as more of an actual state rather than a Stalinist satellite, they began to realize that they needed to protect their heritage. And they hired Robert Painter, who's actually a CPAC attorney, who helped them set up their very conservative-sounding government after communism left, to try to help them get this skeleton back, to be the bellwether for them taking control of their architectural heritage. In between that, you get stories of the rise of fossil collecting and paleontology going way back to the very famous shell hunter from Old Lyme, who lived in a shack that the sea came into when the high tides came in because she was so poverty stricken. But she also revolutionized the world of fossil collecting. So there's a huge historic arc. There is this true crime story. And then there's the landscape of Mongolia, which is a character in itself in this book. So this is an actually wonderful gift, a captivating read. It's called The Dinosaur Artist, Obsession, Betrayal, and the Quest for Earth's Ultimate Trophy. And it's by Paige Williams.
That's great. It's a long subtitle. Can you? What do you guys think about all of these subtitles? I'm so sick of these long subtitles.
Well, they're necessary because titles are oblique.
Yeah.
What I find in
So you like them?
Well, what I find in the bookstore is that people come in and they remember the subtitle because the title isn't meaningful.
Yeah, I guess.
Because the titles really are oblique. We were talking about this in terms of our fast round. You can't tell from the titles what the book's about.
No, it's kind of true.
I'd rather have a short title than a long title.
I'd like that too, but it needs to mean something.
All right.
Go back to the 19th century.
I distracted us. Let's round two. Betsy Burton, leading us.
Okay, I'm going to talk about four books, two novels, a memoir, and a thriller, all of which have as their theme back and forth in time and the present illuminating the past. Mm. First one is Michael Ondaatje's Warlight. Mm. Wonderful, brilliant novel. And as it opens, there are two kids whose mother and father have left them alone in a house in London. And there is a strange man sort of babysitting them. They're teenagers. And he's a crook. And the first half of the book is them running wild in London. And then the mother returns, and the second half of the book is a retrospective of the son as an adult looking back, trying to figure out what his mother was up to, what happened to all of them, what it was all about. It illuminates the war. It is absolutely a great read in terms of the war and is a book you will never forget. It's called Warlight. It's by Michael Ondaatje. Then a memoir, Look Both Ways, by our own Catherine Coles, who Ken was just talking about.
She's busy.
She is busy. This is my favorite of all of her books. It's just brilliant. A Double Journey, the subtitle, A Double Journey Along My Grandmother's Far-Flung Path. Catherine started reading her grandparents' journals and letters, and come to find out, her father was a world-renowned geologist who worked for Standard Oil, and her grandmother was equally brilliant and equally well-educated, but was not allowed to participate in the career. And Catherine herself is married to a very famous scientist. And so there are parallels in this story. And the real heart of it is how to have a good marriage and freedom at the same time. That's what she's kind of getting to. But the grandparents' journeys around the world and their letters to one another, and her grandmother was very interesting, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating book and one that I can't recommend highly enough. And at its core, a truly brilliant book. She's a poet, so the language is beyond brilliant.
Yeah. She's so versatile as a writer.
She's amazing. Yeah. Then another novel. When I picked this up, I thought I was reading a book by Arundhati Roy. But no, it's Anuradha Roy. I'd never heard of her before, although she was shortlisted for the Booker. She's a brilliant writer. And this is a book called All the Lives We Never Lived. And it is about a young man looking back at his mother who abandoned him. This is in India. She went to Bali. She was an artist, and he's trying to discover why she left, who she was, his father was. It's brilliant. It's brilliantly written. It is about that same thing, freedom versus love, really. It's just beyond good. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's All the Lives We Never Lived. And then finally, a thriller by the one and only Kate Atkinson. It's called Transcription. It takes place in the beginning, right before World War II breaks up. This young woman is kind of co-opted by, I think it's C5, or M5, I suppose, as a spy. And her first job is recording the sessions of Nazi sympathizers. And so she spends, you know, months and months transcribing all of these sessions with this group of people that we get to know very well. Then fast forward to the 50s, and she is working for the BBC. At first, she was very naive. Now she's a sophisticated woman and with a very powerful job. And she's walking along the street, and she sees her old boss, and he refuses to acknowledge her. And so that is the mystery that we're solving in the book. She is brilliant, Kate Atkinson is, and the back and forth really does illuminate who this person is that we are with the whole book in very surprising ways. It's Transcription, and it's Kate Atkinson.
Great. Catherine Weller, back to you.
All right, I'll start my fiction round with a confession that I had a hard time with fiction this season.
Oh, really?
It may be me, but I'm just going to have to shout out. I agree that Overstory is still the best novel of the year. There hasn't been anything that's come along that's better than that yet. But then he's a masterful writer.
Yeah.
So some books that I did enjoy are, in fact, the first one, Friday Black by, I'm going to butcher this name, Nana Kwame Adegbenye. It's a book of short stories that has been quite exciting for people. He is a young African-American writer who studied with George Saunders, so everybody's mentioning that, who has written a collection of dark, dark, vivid, brutal stories about race in America, primarily. And it is dystopian. It slides a little bit in time and place setting. But it is absolutely stunning. He is one of these voices that we're going to need to watch because I believe we're going to be seeing a lot more from him. The first and the last stories in this collection are the darkest and the most violent and bloody. So if you have trouble with that, just read through it because I'm going to assume most of us are white. It's important. It's important because one of the things literature and fiction can do is help people understand other people. And this book can help us do that a little bit more. Some of the stories in the middle touch on consumerism, thus Friday Black, mall culture, not just being black in America, but being in America at a time when we're overtaken by money and greed. So, Friday Black by Nana Kwame Adegbenye.
A lot of talk about this book.
Yeah, so much chatter about it, and deservedly so. Next book is Severance by Ling Ma. This is also dystopian fiction, although this is more of a rather dark satire. It starts with a young woman named Candace Chin. She's an immigrant to New York City who walks around observing things while she finds a job. She finally finds a job. And then a virus takes over and people start dying. And finally, she's pretty much the last person in New York. And she's keeping this ghost chronicle as the whole city has cleared out. And she is there alone. New York City itself is a bit of a character at first until she leaves New York finally to join a cult led by a charismatic leader who is such a dangerous and dingy guy that it really starts. That's where we really begin to enter the realm of satire. And it is an enjoyable read. The millennials are liking this one a lot, and I understand why.
Right.
Severance by Ling Ma.
Right.
The last one, this is a light, lovely little book called The Traveling Cat Chronicles by Hiro Arikawa. It is a little road story about a man and a cat in Japan in a silver van, and it is primarily narrated by the cat. So there's a lot of a cat voice in here, but it's the bonding of these two and then exploring Japan and exploring people's lives. And because it's a lighthearted, lovely read, changing them for the better. This is a great grandma gift or a great gift for somebody who is feeling overwhelmed by dark times and dark places. It's called The Traveling Cat Chronicles. It's by Hiro Arikawa.
Great. Okay, Ken Sanders. You never know what to expect with Ken Sanders, and this is not exactly a book.
Well, but that's my trademark, isn't it?
It kind of is, yeah. That's
so
right.
Everett Roos, any of us from this region, we certainly know well by now the legend of Everett Roos and his disappearance in 1934 from Escalante, Utah. And everyone that's ever come onto the story has fallen in love with it, become captivated. And this Frenchman, Emmanuel Tellier, has become obsessed with the project. A year ago, I attended the premiere of his two-person play on Stella and Christopher Roos in Paris, which is absolutely brilliant. He also has released an entire original album of songs composed about Everett Roos, and that's all a prelude to the documentary film that is premiering as we speak in Paris, and we intend to bring him and his film out here next summer for a whole to have the North American premieres in Escalante, Moab, and here in Salt Lake City, and hopefully get you guys involved in that. We haven't talked about this. I promise you, normally I do a reading, okay, Doug? Normally I do a reading, but I promise you I am not going to attempt to sing the Everett Roos songs. We're going to play a clip from the album, from the title song called How the Wild Calls to Me.
The title song from the album How the Wild Calls to Me, and it's the band 49 Swimming Pools.
Which curiously broke up over recording this album.
What? Is that right?
That's correct. Emmanuel, my friend Emmanuel, wrote all the songs and plays the piano and the lead singer on them. And like I said, we are bringing the complete film to Utah for the North American premiere next summer.
Next summer. Ken Sanders owns Ken Sanders Rare Books on 2nd East in Salt Lake City. Catherine Weller also with us from Weller Book Works at Trolley Square. Betsy Burton joins us from the King's English Bookshop at 15th and 15th in Salt Lake City. A list of all of these books that we mentioned, even the ones we didn't get to, will be available on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER.
KUER wherever you go with our mobile app. Listen to a live stream of the station, get the latest stories from NPR and the KUER newsroom, or explore the newest Radio West podcast. You can even access our 24/7 streams of classical music and the BBC. It's not just any app, it's the KUER app, available for Android and iPhone wherever you get your apps.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, it's our holiday book show. This has become a tradition for us. We gather our group of book experts, local booksellers, to give us as many titles as we can manage in an hour. With us is Ken Sanders of Ken Sanders Rare Books, Betsy Burton of the King's English Bookshop, and Catherine Weller of Weller Bookworks. Okay, this is round three. Catherine, let's start with you.
Hey, look, it's another book that has beauty and obsession in the subtitle. This book is called The Feather Thief, Beauty, Obsession, and the Natural History Heist of the Century by Kirk Wallace Johnson. So, yeah, another true crime book that deals with the natural world. This one is also fascinating. It's the tale of a gifted young first American concert flautist who is homeschooled but ends up getting a scholarship to go to study in London to play the flute. Along the way, he's learned fly tying and become obsessed with the bird feathers that are used by fly tiers. And he breaks into a museum and steals hundreds of birds, like a huge rolling suitcase full of what they call bird skins, with, you know, essentially bird carcasses, just lining them up in there so that he can sell the feathers and tie flies. And like all of these wonderful natural history books right now, you learn about this story, but you learn about other things as well. I think that's why I like these books, is extinct species and species nearly driven to extinction by our obsession with the beautiful feathers of male birds, how it first started in hats in our modern world, and we nearly drove several species under completely, and the species we did kill out. It's really a fast-paced, interesting book, a great look at what could very well be a heist of the century. It's called The Feather Thief, and it's by Kirk Wallace Johnson. My next one is called Nine Pints, A Journey Through Money, Medicine, and Mysteries of Blood by Rose George. George is a British writer, so this has a decidedly international feel. She's been compared to Mary Roach. I'd say she's not quite as arch, but she is rather funny. And we start with learning about transfusions and blood typing and the reasons for blood types, like the biological reason why we've evolved to have blood types.
Yeah.
Nobody knows. Still, we don't know. Yeah. She goes into things like the story of the Indian man who has revolutionized in India the menstrual care industry so that collectives of women can produce their own sanitary products and not be banished to things like menstrual huts. There's a documentary about him called Menstrual Man that's just fascinating. It talks about AIDS. It talks about hemophilia. Everything you wanted to know about the nine pints of blood that you probably have in your body. That's an average. A Song for the River by Philip Connors. We know Philip from his first book, Fire Season, which was the book about his time being a fire lookout up in the Gila. This is about the Gila River and the efforts to dam the Gila River right now in New Mexico. It's the portion he's taught writing about is one of the last free-flowing portions of river in the U.S. It is also a book about not just the loss of the river, but loss of friends, loss of faith, loss of a sense of oneself, and trying to find redemption from those. Philip's writing is lovely. This book is lovely. It's called A Song for the River by Philip Connors. Susan Orlean, author of The Orchid Thief, has written a book just about libraries, which was fascinating to me because I've worked in a lot of libraries in my life, including every major library on this campus. This is about the Los Angeles Public Library primarily, and it starts with the great fire of the LA Public Library in the 80s, which nobody knows about because the day after it started burning, Chernobyl happened. It was so serious that a lot of the library employees had PTSD after it was done. So it's about the rebuilding of that library and the rebuilding of libraries in general, what they are becoming and what they have become to remain relevant in the modern world. And there's a lot. The characters in here are wonderful, passionate, funny people. So any book lover will love The Library Book by Susan Orlean.
Great. Terrific. A lot of, it seems like a theme there, right? Natural things and, and we'll talk about that later.
I think it's extraordinary. I broke it at the end, but.
You did, but it's extraordinary to me. All right, Catherine, thanks very much. Ken Sanders, you're next.
Doug, we've all heard of the famous Edward Sheriff Curtis and his 30 volumes of the great North American Indian portraits. But at the same time, Curtis was working his now multi-million dollar magic. Joseph K. Dixon was doing the same thing on the northern Indians of this country on the Wanamaker expedition from 1908 to 13. I've known about it from occasional photographs I've handled of it, but I knew nothing about it. Finally, for the first time, there's this very comprehensive book on the Wanamaker expedition and the Dixon photographs. It has beautiful reproductions of all of his glass plate negatives of the
taken on the expedition.
Yes, wow. From 1908 so to 13, more than a century ago, and a massive history of this very, very little known expedition, The Vanishing Race by Joseph K. Dixon, who is the photographer of the expedition. And it's about time that someone other than Edward Sheriff Curtis got a little bit of credit for documenting what we often call the vanishing race at that time.
These photographs are extraordinary.
They really, truly are. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. Hmm. And I'm about time.
Yeah.
Many times I've talked about these Kala editions, these new beautiful classics of literature and art, and with beautiful classic artwork. Today I chose to bring a new one in, a book everybody's heard of, The Pilgrim's Progress, back to the 1600s. Kate McLeod, the musician I mentioned earlier, she recorded a song based on this book, and she joked at the concert about it, that this, The Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan, could easily be the world's first self-help book. This is a beautiful, illustrated on every single page edition. If you ever wanted to start a gift-giving tradition of treasured classical literature with absolutely stunning artwork, you can't go wrong with these. There's dozens and dozens of Kala books out. This is just one of the latest. And then in a completely different direction, here is a brand new edition of the works of Chaucer, of Geoffrey Chaucer.
It must be 20 pounds.
I'd say more like 24. It's a big book, also illustrated every single page. And this is a facsimile reproduction of the famous, the Kelmscott Press. Everybody's heard of Johannes Gutenberg and his famous little press that printed the world's first movable type Bible, right?
Yeah.
Even more famous than Everett Roos, I believe. Well, the Kelmscott Press is one of the legendary early presses and printers. You can't touch any of their original works for under hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. And this is a beautiful, this designed by the famous William Morris, by the way. Just
like
an absolutely beautiful edition of a beautiful work, and just great books for Christmas gift giving.
Say the name of this.
The Works of Geoffrey Chaucer, the William Morris edition, Kelmscott Press.
Great. Okay, Betsy Burton, back to you.
Okay, we're about to turn to children's books, and I want to start with one that it seems to me to be very appropriate to this time, more than, it's called Dreamers. And it is the exact opposite of the portrayal of dreamers that we hear sometimes on the news. It is a magnificent children's book. The artwork is vivid, colorful, absolutely wonderful. And I'm going to read to it, but there's some explanation that we need to have first, because you can't tell from the reading everything that's happening. So on the very first page, there is a mother with a child expressing her love. And a couple of pages later, the same mother with child is crossing a bridge and sees a smoky, huge city on the other side. Then there are several pages where they're exploring, very confused, trying to find their way in this city, and then they find books, and that's the substance of what you're about to hear. Yuyi Morales Dreamers. I dreamed of you. Then you appeared. Together we became amor, love, amor, resplendent life, you and I. One day, we bundled gifts in our backpack and crossed a bridge, outstretched like the universe. And when we made it to the other side, thirsty, in awe, unable to go back, we became immigrants. Migrantes, you and I. The sky and the land welcomed us in words unlike those of our ancestors. There were so many things we didn't know. Unable to understand and afraid to speak, we made lots of mistakes. You and I became caminantes, thousands and thousands of steps we took around this land until the day we found a place we had never seen before. Suspicious, improbable, unbelievable, surprising, of course, these are the books, unimaginable, where we didn't need to speak. We only needed to trust, and we did. Books became our language, Books became our home. Books became our lives. We learned to read, to speak, to write, and to make our voices heard. Someday, we will become something we haven't even yet imagined. But right now, we are stories. We are two languages. We are lucha. We are resilience. We are hope. We are dreamers, soñadores of the world. We are love, amor, love. This book is so beautiful, and it seems to me, with so few words, it gets so deeply into the heart of the experience of being an immigrant that it makes me want to weep, especially when I listen to the news. It's just a beautiful book, Dreamers by Yuyi, I think that's how you say your name, Morales.
It's Betsy Burton. She's with the King's English Bookshop at 15th and 15th in Salt Lake. We also have with us Catherine Weller from Weller Bookworks at Trolley Square in Salt Lake, and Ken Sanders, who owns Ken Sanders Rare Books on 2nd East in Salt Lake City. We're on to the children's book round now, and we're going to start with Ken Sanders.
Okay, Doug. Well, since it's Christmas, I need to update you. My grandchildren moved to London. They took their parents with them. They're not really into wearing the uniforms for school so much. Particularly, Lyra is chafing at the bit at having to wear the same thing to school every day. Flynn is more involved in learning French and building robots, but Lyra has become quite the journalist. They visited me when I was in Paris for the weekend, and Lyra, every time we were sitting down having tea, she's very much embraced the tea and cucumber sandwich thing, I
wow.
might say. Flynn, her brother, will help her make the sandwiches, but there's no way that boy is going to eat a cucumber sandwich. But he likes the process. So Lyra has discovered journaling. Now, mm-hmm. she's seven. She may not have a perfect grasp of spelling and grammar yet, but that girl has got a vocabulary, and she is just, we're sitting in a cafe in Paris, and she is just scribbling, scribbling, scribbling. And that led me to the idea to lead off with blank books can be children's books. Mm-hmm. They can be anything, really. Mm-hmm. But kids, especially a certain type of child, will just absolutely, like Lyra's doing, is just, I can't keep her supplied with lined notebooks because she prefers to write. But the same thing is true as unlined blank books of all sizes for more artistic kids. And she just absolutely loves them. And I'm having a hard time sending her enough of them because she's just constantly journaling and writing in them, and I can't wait to see where that leads in the future. Yeah. So I'm totally believing in blank books. One
Love
other, Chris Van Allsburg did this incredible Mark Helprin written, interpreted of the Swan Lake trilogy with just stunning, stunning artwork by the celebrated Chris Van Allsburg. It's a beautiful, beautiful gift for a child to be read to. I think more older children could read it themselves.
What's the name?
A Kingdom Far and Clear, the complete Swan Lake trilogy, Mark Helprin, illustrated by Chris Van Allsburg.
Great. Catherine.
Okay, my first one is a book called Sanity in Tallulah by Molly Brooks. It's a graphic novel about two girls who live on a space station, which can be really boring unless your science experiment, a three-headed cat, escapes and you've got to catch it and undo the havoc the three-headed cat has caused. This, like many kids' books right now, has embraced diversity, so we have a multiracial cast. And I guess a multi-species cast, since we have a three-headed cat. And speaking of species, there is a young reader's edition of Charles Darwin's On the Origin of Species.
Wow.
It's adapted by Rebecca Stefoff, and it is a very large picture book. It's got lots of illustrations, lots of photographs. But Rebecca hasn't just reprinted his Darwin's famous text. She has also added in some of the new scientific discoveries. So she's expanded on it somewhat. I'll say lastly, Adrian Simcox Does Not Have a Horse by Marcy Campbell and Karina Lukin is a picture book that on its face is about lying, but really it's about more than that. Adrian Simcox comes to school every day and he talks about his horse. A girl goes to visit him in his house and finds a really broken down house clearly poverty-stricken, and he doesn't have a horse. What he has is an imagination and a way to escape a really dark reality. And so instead of calling him on that, she joins him in his fantasy of having a horse. And it's just, I'm getting teary-eyed like I do. It is a wonderful book about acceptance. Adrian Simcox does not have a horse.
Betsy.
I have a graphic book, too. It's called Hey Kiddo, and it actually did win the National Book Award. It is just a wonderful graphic novel. It begins when a young boy, young teenager, is being taught to drive by his grandfather and then gets back into his past where his mother did love him but loved heroin more. So the story of an addiction, a rescue by grandparents, a kid who doesn't fit in but who finds art. Absolutely touching, but also just a great read. You know he's going to be okay because he wrote the book. And it's just a wonderful graphic novel, Hey Kiddo, by Jarrett Krashowska, I guess you say. I'm not sure that's how you say his name. Sorry. Then a book for the whole family, but a children's book, The Lost Words, is about the fact that the Oxford Children's Dictionary started dropping words that describe nature in order to put in technical words. They dropped words like dandelion and fern.
What?
And raven.
Oh, now you've outraged Ken.
We're all outraged. Yeah. And in order to call attention to it, they created this gorgeous book. Each word that was dropped gets two different paintings and a poem, and it's just glorious. And for the family to sit around and be outraged and mesmerized at the same time on Christmas Day, what could be better?
Say the name again. This is
called
great.
The Lost Words, Robert McFarlane and Jackie Morris. And just quickly, one other one that I wanted to say, with my favorite Christmas book, which isn't a Christmas book, it's All of a Kind Family Hanukkah. It's got wonderful illustrations by Paul Zielinski, and it's by Emily Jenkins. And it's about a 1912 Hanukkah with five girls, and it's charming.
All right, I'm going to give you guys one more title for children's book section because we've got a little bit of time. Ken, give me one more. And Kat, you
I gotta
get ready.
I got to go back to my comic book favorites of my youth. They're doing these entire series. I only brought one of collected Mickey Mouse and Donald Ducks. And, you know, and Mickey and Minnie Mouse and Donald and Daisy Duck. Don't forget Daisy and Minnie. These are just wonderful collections of all the old comic strips. They've done endless volumes of them, and they're beautiful.
Great.
Dactyl Hill Squad by Daniel Jose Older is an alternate history set in New York as the Civil War begins. It involves dinosaurs, children of color, and fighting for the right thing as the war and draft riots break out. The children and the dinosaurs are the heroes of this, and it's a reclaiming and romp through history.
Say the name again.
Dactyl Hill Squad by Daniel Jose Older.
Great.
And another picture book, All the Animals Where I Live by Philip C. Stead, features a very scraggly looking dog going out for a stroll and what he encounters along the way. First of all, a grandmother and a wild turkey, and then the tale by the old woman who claims she saw a bear. Well, the only bear our dog has seen is a toy bear, and he wonders if they're alike. And on he goes, seeing all manner of birds and beasts and the seasons. It's absolutely charming, beautiful little watercolors, All the Animals Where I Live by Philip C. Stead.
Great. Okay. Good job, you guys. We have time for a lightning round. Let's make it lightning. That means quick, although I know the subtitles are, you have to read.
Problematic.
It's problematic because they're vague titles, but let's jump in. Let's just go. Ken, you can start.
The Salt Lake Papers by a beloved retired professor at the U, Edward Leaders. Essays on Earthscapes of Utah, Avalanche Busters, a historical memoir of the Snowbird and Alta Ski Patrols by Linda Bonar, and a new book of poetry by Rob Carney, The Book of Sharks.
Arbox, the store that performs what it promises,
oh
by
gosh.
Eileen Hallett-Stowe.
The world's first department store.
What a blast from the past.
Yeah.
Arbox, okay, yes.
Arbox, and then you die of dysentery. Lessons of Adulting from the Oregon Trail by Lauren Reeves. I Don't Really Love You and Other Gentle Reminders of Existential Dread in Your Everyday Life by Alex Bayer, and a cocktail book, Are You There, God? It's Margarita. It's me, Margarita. More cocktails with a literary twist.
Brilliant.
Okay. The Walkers Anthology, compiled by Deborah Manley. Lots of famous writers writing about their favorite walks. The Better World Shopping Guide, a green shopping guide, which you should all buy and use. Bibliophile, which is a very colorful miscellany of books, bookstores, and all things about books. Finally, Stephen King, Elevation, a weird but short Stephen King novel.
Which is rare.
Very rare.
So yeah, yeah.
The short part.
The short part, absolutely. Okay, do one more quickly, everyone.
One book?
Yeah, one book.
Oh, okay.
Craig Child's Flying Home, The Colorado Plateau from Above and Below.
The Fifth Risk by Michael Lewis.
Oh. 1,000 books to read before you die, which is what you need when your bookseller fails you.
That's Betsy Burton from King's English Bookshop, Catherine Weller from Weller Bookworks, and Ken Sanders from Ken Sanders Rare Books, a list of those books. And we got to a lot. Didn't get to all of them. All of them will be on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. Thank you all very much for being with us.
Thank you, Doug.
Thanks.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. The program is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.